guests on Open Book at 4 o'clock here on Radio 4. But first, it's time for our new classic serial. We travel back to the year 1911 to embark on a journey to an Amazonian plateau where, it seems, time has stood still.
The Lost World by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatised by Chris Harold. Episode 1, A Bridge to the Unknown.
Reasa! Reasa, senor!
I'm coming! Yeah, just as fast as I damn well can.
Non ti tempo.
Now, in here.
His face. What happened to his face?
Four amigos. Ants. Wasps. Carapato. Long time in the jungle.
Can you hear me, man? My name is Challenger. I'm a scientist. I'm going to help you.
Challenger. I'm beyond help. Challenger? I've heard of you. Yes, I have.
Who are you, sir?
My name is Maple White.
Here. Drink this.
God bless you. I came here with James Culver. Uh-huh. A pair of damn fools we were. They got him. Jim. The brutes.
Who got Jim? Who were these brutes?
That clicking. Ah!
You came here to explore?
No. I'm an artist. We came for the landscapes, the fauna, but no proper equipment for the jungle. Such amateurs. Oh, dear. We'd heard stories. But what we found, Challenger. Oh, it's so bright in here. The light.
What did you find?
They kept me prisoner, but I was too cunning for them. I found a way out from the plateau. They chased me, but I closed the door behind me.
What did you see on the plateau?
In the knapsack, Challenger.
Oh, my gosh.
The air in this place is sparkling. Oh, dear. Wish I could paint it.
This is what you saw? Tell me, Maple White.
Recorded it all. Map. There's a map, too. Guarded. Great.
Great what? No, I've got you, man. Just hang on. Just tell me what you can.
Greatest thing in the world. Oh. So much light.
The Señor is morto.
That he is. God rest his inquiring soul. I want an Igara, two good oarsmen, and two bearers. Men I can rely on. Men who can keep their mouths shut.
Mouths shut?
Silencio. A journey of 3 days. We start at dawn.
Come in. You sent for me, Mr. Beaumont?
So I did, Mr. Malone, so I did. Sit down. I'm curious about you.
In what way, sir?
You are a competent reporter, even though a novice. And you have a knack of establishing relations with strangers quickly. A sort of magnetism. People open up to you.
You're very kind.
But most striking of all, you seem positively anxious to lose your life. Well, your report on the explosion in the Welsh mine, first class. Though, was it strictly necessary to explore the ruins as they collapsed about you? Well, next thing I know, you'll be filing a posthumous report.
I am, yes, drawn to adventure. My nature, my upbringing, my Irish temperament. Who knows?
I respect you for it, Mr. Malone.
If you were to find some special mission for me, wherever it took me, whatever the risks, I wouldn't let the paper down. I'd hope that's why you'd sent for me.
The special mission. The big blank spaces in the map are being rapidly filled in. I have got something for you, though. Something different. Mm. Oh, rest assured, it's by no means without danger.
I'm your man.
Start a journal. Record it all for me, from the beginning.
So, my first journal entry. 6 p.m., August the 11th, 1912. The Savage Club.
Professor Challenger, the biologist. Fellow came back last year from South America with the strangest of stories. And a colleague, Dr. Sumley, made a very damaging critique. Put Challenger's professional position at stake.
I'm with Tarp Henry, staff writer on Nature magazine. Decent fellow.
Challenger's background. Just a quick summary, not too quick, though.
Notebook ready? Well, here's his summary as best I can record it. Here we go. Challenger, George Edward, born Largs, 1863. Education, Largs Academy, Edinburgh University. British Museum Assistant, 1892. Assistant Keeper of Comparative Anthropology Department, 1893. Resigned after acrimonious correspondence, same year. Winner of Crayston Medal for Zoological Research. Publication, some observations upon a series of Kalmuck skulls. Numerous papers, including outlines of vertebrate evolution. How's that?
Your memory, Tarp. I'll never get over it.
And how was your shorthand?
Pretty much equal to the task.
Liar. Something else. Before Challenger became a name, an essay. Let me get it right. On the potentialities of extreme endemism.
That sounds bad for the health.
What caught the young Challenger's imagination, if you can restrain your flippancy?
Sorry.
Apology accepted. Was the arrested development of life forms in an African lake. But I don't see how this can possibly help you. You see, Challenger is as clever as they make them, but he's a faddist.
What's his latest fad?
You know about Wiseman's theories of the germplasm.
I don't, but you do. I'd like your help in writing a letter. It goes something like this. Here. I just need some help filling in the gaps.
You deceitful dog, Malone. You want my help in perpetrating a fraud?
If you be so kind.
August the 15th, 3 p.m. exactly, as specified. 28 Enmore Park Gardens. It's just an interview. Why do I feel as if it's scrummed down and the match depends on me? A taciturn servant shows me into a substantial house. He tells me to wait in the corridor and I drip there for a while. A door to the side opens and here is a bright, vivacious, dark-eyed lady. Small in build, more French than English in her type.
Your coat, please. You need to dry yourself.
No, very kind, but no.
You have come to see Challenger?
I sent him a letter, and he responded.
Mr. Malone, yes. You have met him before?
Never in life.
Are you going to ask him about South America?
Yes.
I see. I must give you some warnings in advance. When you enter his study, make sure you can always reach the door. You may need to depart swiftly. Also, on the right-hand side of that door is a bell push. Use it and I will come to your aid.
But
the Amazon changed the professor. People didn't believe him, yet he is the most honest man in the world. Do him at least the courtesy of pretending to believe him. Remember the bell. Even at his worst, I can usually control him.
So I,
Edith.
Edith. I don't quite understand. Are you his, nurse? His keeper?
Ah, Mr. Malone, I have a more, how do you say, testing job than that. I have the honor of being Professor George Edward Challenger's wife. So, the door at the end of the corridor. Take care.
Mr. Edward Malone.
Professor Challenger.
It's his size which takes one's breath away. His body is built like an ape.
Mr. Malone. I have the impression that you're examining me like a specimen. I'm more used to the reverse of that relationship. I was intrigued by your letter. You questioned a statement of mine, namely, I protest strongly against the dogmatic assertion that each separate id is a microcosm possessed of an historical architecture elaborated slowly through the series of generations.
I questioned it in a spirit of respect, sir.
Speak up, sir. Speak from the chest. And indeed from the brain, if you can combine the two. Tell me, You realize the germplasm is different from the parthenogenetic egg?
Of course.
And telogeny is still sub judice.
Oh, why, surely.
Mm-hmm. And what does that prove? Shall I tell you?
Please do.
The last two things I said are gibberish. It proves that you are a damned imposter. A crawling journalist who is as lacking in science as in honest reporting. Did you think you could deceive me with your walnut of a brain?
Hey, now, I mean...
I am going to pick you up, carry you down the corridor, and throw you down the steps. Oh, and don't bother about the bell. God bless Edith, but I disabled it some days ago. Give me one reason why I shouldn't.
I did try and deceive you, and I was foolish.
Those two statements are given.
You grant interviews only rarely.
Please desist from telling me things I already know.
But I wanted to give an honest report of your South American journey.
A mocking misrepresentation, like the others. Why should I need your help? Dr. Summerlee, a bureaucrat, a manipulator of committees, scarcely a scientist at all. My lord. Any final words to say to me before I eject you?
Duff! Two words only. You should consider putting me down, sir. I must tell you, I have played rugby for Ireland.
Yeah, and I have played rugby for Scotland. Two words.
Extreme endemism.
When did you hear that?
I looked up your paper before you quizzed me, Professor. I could hardly make head nor tail of it. But there was something in the concept that made me wonder about what you said you found in the Amazon basin. Thank you.
Lake Tanganyika. I was a young man when I went there. It's a static environment.
Where extreme endemism thrives. Endemism, meaning in the original Greek, native, local to the specific place.
You bother to find out. It's a nearly dead, stagnant body of water. That comes to life only when the rainy season arrives. The lake, unrefreshed by external change, is host to tiny organisms and small creatures that exist there and nowhere else in the world, and have done so for a very long time.
Evolution has passed these species by, as if they were preserved in aspic.
A populist way of putting it, but not one that sacrifices accuracy to vividness. I'll concede you that. Evolution has passed them by. Mr. Malone, you have redeeming qualities. I'm going to put you to a test.
Try me, sir.
Please treat this sketchbook with the greatest care.
Oh. Turtles and their eggs. And a creature like a pig, but not quite a pig. Beautifully detailed drawings.
From life, would you say?
And most certainly.
A year ago, I was studying the fauna of certain tributaries of the Amazon. As I returned from the backcountry, some Kukama Indians approached me. A white man was ill. Perhaps I could help. The man, Meeple White, died in my arms. He was the artist who gave me these drawings.
A bird. Perched on a spire of rock beside towering cliffs. But what a bird! And that beak!
From life again?
Yes, undoubtedly.
Remember that, please. I journeyed to the cliffs, and I shot a specimen of the selfsame bird. Well, I say bird, but let's come back to that. There was a boat accident on the return journey, and this is all that remains.
A wing, but it's at least 4 feet long.
It's just a part of it.
And what's that sort of leathery membrane hanging off it? Is this from a pelican? No, I can see from your face that it isn't.
An unusual form of scientific deduction, Mr. Malone. But in this case, valid. Lancaster. Extinct animals. The authoritative work on this subject. Here. Look at this plate. Compare Lancaster's image of the bird to Maple White's.
Oh, but the resemblance is exact.
Not a bird, though. Look back at Maple White's drawing. Mm. Look at the jaw. Look, man.
Oh, the teeth are very striking.
Good. But of course, birds don't have teeth.
They don't.
This isn't a bird. It's a pterodactyl, a flying lizard of the Jurassic period.
Professor.
Back to the sketchbook. Last page. What do you see?
What a creature. Head like a fowl. Uh-huh. Body like a bloated lizard.
Uh-huh.
Spiked tail. Beside it, a tiny human figure. A pygmy, challenger.
No, no. Full-sized man. But he's a fiction. Apart from anything else, no man could have stood in front of that brute of a stegosaurus and lived. Maple White put the man into his drawing for scale, to show the relative sizes.
A stegosaurus?
Drawn from life?
Well, I don't see how anyone could imagine this or make it up. But...
The vastly high cliffs form a plateau where... Yes, Mr. Malone, follow the thought through. Your instincts are good.
Like the lake, the ordinary laws of nature have been suspended. Creatures survive which would otherwise disappear.
Maple White ascended that plateau. But I did not have the resources to follow
him. But these discoveries are huge. How could such things be not known about?
Try and understand the Amazon, Mr. Malone. 50,000 miles of waterway running through a forest the size of all Europe. Bigger. You and I could be as far away from each other as Scotland is from Constantinople. And yet each of us would be standing in the same forest. This isn't just a remote country. It is another world within our world where anything is possible. Do you begin to believe me?
I do. Of course. I would want to see more with my own eyes. This is so very different from the wild rumors that have surrounded your expedition.
Well, I have not always been my own best advocate.
What a story!
Yes. But I must ask you to write nothing about our discussion today. I do have something you can write about. Tonight, at the University of London, a special meeting, an extraordinary convocation, some such nonsense. Come to it. See academia in full frenzy. Write about that, young Malone.
I shall, Professor.
Professor? Aye. Well, we'll see how likely I am to retain that title at the end of the evening.
Come, come, goodness me, come to order, please.
Ah, good, Malone, there you are. Still on the Challenger trail? He didn't throw you into the street then?
Yes, he didn't mention that possibility to me.
If people would be so kind, we really must settle down.
Here comes Challenger, no respect for punctuality.
Yes, yes, here I am. As Vice-Chancellor Meldrum says, can we all settle down and move things along as swiftly as maybe to some purposeful conclusion? Settle down now, please, everybody!
Thank you, Professor. So kind.
Just who do you think you are, Challenger?
Just what sort of a peanut-brained question is that, sir? Vice-Chancellor, reports that I have made about my Amazonian expedition, exaggerated and distorted by the press, have brought shame upon the university in which I am proud to teach.
Shame? Strong word. Goodness me, very strong word.
Shame indeed. Shame on you, Challenger. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. Ah, but a thing it is when close cousins marry. Shame. A word much used by Dr. Summerlee, who predictably I see here. Good evening. No scientific committee would be complete without Dr. Summerlee. Would that Dr. Summerlee had more time to participate in science itself. But Dr. Summerlee is ever busy elsewhere.
That's enough, yeah. Challenger.
A young woman stands, no more than 25 years old. Slim, straight of back, with an authority and a fierceness. And a face. Those grey-green eyes. A man could drown in those eyes. I think I must redraft this.
Dr. Diana Summerlee, you look surprised.
Diana, the huntress.
Vice-Chancellor, always a pleasure. In this awkward business, one could not ask for a better adjudicator.
How kind, Doctor.
When you two are done with pleasure and kindness, I'd like to revert to science.
The trouble is, Professor Challenger, your science lacks proof. Extinct animals alive in the Amazon basin. An extraordinary claim. But your evidence... questionable, hazy, and your refusal to give a latitude and longitude. Oh, yeah. I, too, would like to revert to science.
Oh, goodness me, there must be a way forward. A sort of, I don't know, they're putting things to the test. That's the scientific way, isn't it?
It is, Vice-Chancellor, well remembered. Here is what I propose. A journey to the place I have described, to end once and for all the doubt that hangs over what I saw.
You would need an official observer from the university.
Of course. This is to be a far more organized trip than my own hasty foray a year ago. I will need help. Someone more experienced than I in this area of the Amazon. Local dialects, terrain, and so on.
May I chip in? Roxton's the name. John Roxton. Been reading about your discoveries, Professor. Like to see for myself. Know the Amazon a bit. Astonishing place. Can shoot a bit. Find my way about a bit.
Roxton. Languid. Tall. Sunburned face. One of the greatest shots in the Empire.
I'll come on your expedition, sir, if you'll have me. Do my best to make sure you get where you want to go and bring you back alive. Your last trip, you were deucedly lucky. Though on this trip, you'll have to take some of your orders from me.
I know your reputation, Lord John. And yes, I would have you on this expedition. But I'm not a man who likes taking orders.
Me neither, Professor. Of course not. Perhaps we'll get along.
I shall also require the services of a person who is neither affiliated to myself nor to the university to keep an independent record of our journey.
Me! I mean, sorry, I volunteer.
Have you gone mad?
I'm Edward Dunn Malone of the Daily Gazette. Oh. While I have met you before, Professor Challenger, I can guarantee my independence.
A journalist and the Daily Gazette. Surely a rather sensational newspaper.
Oh, I do enjoy the Gazette.
Are you the same Malone who was expected to get his rugby cap for Ireland?
Yes, sir.
Capital. Settles it for me at any rate. That 20-yard swerving run at Oldham last year.
Let me return to the subject of the university representative on this expedition. Vice-Chancellor Meldrum.
Me? Up the Amazon? Oh,
good heavens, sir. Your grey hairs and grave responsibilities forbid it. No, I suggest that in the interests of critical academic rigour...
Absolutely. I shall set about finding the right candidate.
I was going to say that in the interests of academic rigour, surely the most rigorous of my academic critics would be the most appropriate person to come on this expedition.
I see. You mean Dr. Summerlee. Yes, yes, an elegant thought.
Oh, I have a loaded schedule. Yes. Appointments and supervisory work, administrative work. Yeah,
Professor Challenger has issued you, one can only call it, an ultimatum, Dr. Summerlee. You have questioned him in the strongest possible terms. Now, you must take your part in finding the answers.
But, Vice-Chancellor...
Administrative work you can delegate, but you cannot delegate the search for truth. Goodness, well, I think we're all agreed. I shall leave it to the various parties to work out the details.
I am in the Albany rooms of Lord John Roxton, a room lit with the ruddy radiance of electricity.
I have been tricked, damn it.
I seem to have been rather rushed into things.
I'm not normally impetuous, but there is something compelling about Challenger. Is he joining us?
He'll appear when and if it suits him.
Now, I am a seasoned traveller, but how well prepared are you, Mr. Malone, Dr. Summerlee, for this expedition?
Lord John, perhaps you think, because I'm a woman, and a woman without experience of jungles, African or Amazonian, that I am inadequate to what lies ahead.
Brandy's all round, I think. A well-rounded 1865. While I did, in fact, happen to notice that you were a woman, Dr. Summerlee, I did not for a moment think that made you any the less competent than Challenger or Malone. The fact of the matter is simple. Rather a wonderful, smoky aftertaste, think you'd agree. My point is, man and woman alike, you're both equally incompetent. Equality of the sexes, eh?
That's coming at it a little strong, sir.
Can you shoot, Malone?
At school, I fired off a good few rounds in the reserves.
Oh, Lord.
I never thought it essential for a career in journalism.
In South America, you'll be like a bee without a sting.
I can shoot, Roxton.
You can?
One of my uncles had an estate in Scotland. When the season came, we culled the deer.
Your gun?
Bland 577 Axide.
See the white rhino head on the wall? With a rather supercilious look. Shot him with a Bland, something in common, eh?
Sometimes one of my uncle's deer, aged and frail, had to be shot for the overall well-being of the herd, as opposed to being shot for decoration, not quite the same thing.
Perhaps we should turn ourselves to the practicalities of the voyage.
A voyage of some comfort. A booth liner is a luxurious form of travel indeed.
Steady.
Though how Roxton has prevailed upon the captain to allow us the use of one of the smaller lower decks for our own purposes, I do not know.
Breathe out, and as the breath leaves your lungs, squeeze. Better, Malone, but you're still letting the muzzle lift.
Perhaps a smaller caliber might suit Miss Malone.
Good thought. I suppose, yes, you could try my express nitro. Mm. Now. Much better. Yes, that's the gun for you.
I feel far more confident. May I take this?
If you don't mind, I'll find you another. I have one in my stores. We can break it in tomorrow.
Of course.
Malone! I need you!
Some details he wants me to add. My journal. My daily slog.
Scribble, 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 eh? Mr. Malone? May I ask, I wondered, this rifle, is it personal to you, Lord John?
It's merely the one I use the most. A tool, as a knife is to a chef.
I can't help noticing the notches on it. Some sort of tally of animals shot?
Something like that. Enough shooting, though. Yes, enough shooting for one day.
You have something on your mind, Lord John?
I do, Dr. Summerlee. We'll make port soon, Manaus. Tell me, do you care for the opera?
Good heavens. Yes, I do, but...
You'll see. Surprise. My treat.
The city of Manaus. We are in the Amazonas Opera House.
The local rubber barons had this opera house built in Europe. Marble from Italy, fabrics from France, wood from Brazil, but sent back to England for carving, shipped back again.
But the cost?
Oh, you would not believe the money to be made from rubber.
Sorry, who on earth is the fellow in the feathers?
Shh. He's Papageno, the birdcatcher. Try and drop your voice.
So this is opera. I see. I shall stick to the music hall.
Here she is.
A paddle boat. The Esmeralda, though I can hardly make the name out through the rust.
She's sound enough. Bearers are loading our stores. We'll move to smaller boats when we reach the tributary.
The tributary whose location Challenger so pig-headedly guards.
And here comes my head man with a manifest. It's not Ignacio. Where's Ignacio?
Signor Lord John Roxton.
Yeah, that's me.
Nasu's in a fever. He begs your forgiveness. He has asked me to lead your journey in his place. I am Gomez. It would be an honor to serve you.
Well, Gomez...
My family has served you before. My brother was one of your bearers when you traveled down the Espinares. Pedro Lopez.
I'm afraid I don't specifically remember your brother. So many chaps. You know the jungle?
Oh, the jungle is my world, Lord John.
Very well, Gomez. Your English is a heck of a sight better than some of those other fellows. Carry on with the loading.
I am someone who can be relied on, Lord John. Be sure of that.
Gomez, what a striking smile he has.
Yes. Strange thing is, it reminds me of something.
Two canoes with canopies. Challenger in one, Summerlee in the other. Sensible arrangement.
Why have the Indians slowed their paddling?
Look at the water, young fellow.
Well, the river is running faster. And ahead of us, white smoke.
It's not smoke. Spray. Brace yourself.
The canoes shoot forward. For a dizzy moment, we are in midair. Then we hit the water again, and we are free.
Quite something, eh?
It's as though the river is pouring off the edge of the world!
Watch the boat! Make sure you write that down!
The
canoe changes direction. We head for the bank, fighting the pull of the water. Our Indians carry the canoes. Soon we will rejoin the river. But for now, the Amazonian jungle. Soaring redwoods and cedars. Their foliage filters the sun, and we walk in a perpetual golden twilight. Lichens in shades of incandescent gold and red smolder upon the swarthy tree trunks.
Smolder, Mr. Malone?
Smolder? Yes. That is the right word, or the one that seems best to me. I'm trying to bring this place to life. For people who can't be here with us, who can't see this. So, how do you see this place?
The trees, the light. It's like being in a cathedral. But that's fanciful.
No, a most apt comparison. Ah, look over there, peeping out into the, if you like, nave.
Cebus capuchinus. Capuchin monkeys.
They're capuchins, and they have white faces. But surely a subspecies of a vicious variant. Look at the paws, the stance.
These are textbook capuchins.
No. The textbook is telling you what to see. You've forgotten how to use your eyes.
Cebus capuchinus, it's quite clear.
The only thing that's clear, Dr. Summerlee, is that you should start observing what is, in fact, in front of you.
Hear me. Hear me. Champagne Charlie is my name. Champagne drinking is my game.
You see them, Summerlee?
The macaws? Yes. Oh, I suppose you're going to tell me they're not macaws.
Not at all.
Really?
It was your identification of the scarlet ibis earlier today that I was going to call into question.
Challenger! Do you hear that? Malone? Roxton?
A pause. I've heard that once before. War drums.
Yes, senor. War drums. White Indians. They watch us every mile of the way. Kill us if they can.
Watch us? How can they watch us, Gomez?
Those Indians know. Tem o jeito deles. They talk the drum talk to each other. Kill us if they can.
I have one word to say back to those gentlemen. If. Resume rowing. Rapido.
At least six or seven drums now throb from various points. Sometimes they beat quickly, sometimes slowly, sometimes in obvious question and answer. A high staccato rattle from the east, a deep roll from the north.
We will kill you if we can.
Dr. Summerlee, on the subject of our reverberating friends, would you say Maranha or Amahuaca cannibal?
We have no evidence to base a judgment on.
Language? Any thoughts?
Answer as before, but like all such tribes in this area, I shall expect to find them of polysynthetic speech.
Really?
Polysynthetic? Doctor? Professor? My education consists largely of rugby. I should like to give an account of this, though.
Let me give you an example.
Sorry to interrupt, but listen.
I, for one, don't hear anything.
Nor I.
I concur.
Quite. That's what I wanted you to hear. The drums have stopped.
Well, they've gone.
Still kill us if they can.
Thank you, Gomez. But the man has a point. The drumming was a threat. An overture to the main thing. I think we must expect a follow-up to the threat. Some more direct and lethal action. Wait. Oh, yes. Dear heavens, I see what you blighters have in mind. The river narrows here. Trees hanging over it. Canoes to the middle of the water. All the speed you can muster. Now, everyone, cover your arms, legs. If you've a hat, wear it. Lie as low as you can. Quick, and now. Steady. Collager. Nearly through the narrows.
Now I see them. Black darts shooting out in clouds from the jungle. Most fall in the water. One lodges in the side of my canoe, its feather flight quivering like a rattlesnake's tail. I pluck it out. 6 inches long, A slender splinter of wood with a tip that looks horribly sharp, covered in dark, sticky fluid.
Bamboo dart! Don't go near the tip, Malone. Karari freezes your lungs and heart. Dead in no time.
The water puckers as darts hit it. On the overhanging trees, Indians wield blowpipes their own height. We pull out of their range. Then something terrible happens. The second canoe, containing Roxton and Diana Summerlee, bumps up against mine.
Malone, you have your notebook?
Of course.
What's the time? Come on, nearest dammit.
Just past 12 minutes past three. 5 seconds past.
Be so good as to take this down. The dart entered the subject's left ankle at 12 minutes past three. The penetration was shallow, and the dart was removed almost instantly, thus reducing the intake of Karari into the bloodstream. The subject, a 25-year-old woman, in good health, weighing 120 pounds.
Dear Lord, with utter calm, Diana places the dart into a canvas specimen container.
Are you getting this down, Malone? You look distracted.
Yes. Yes, I'm getting it down.
Elapsed time in seconds?
15 seconds.
Noted. Keep your eye on the watch. 15-second intervals, please. Loss of sensation in the lower leg. Rising rapidly. Pins and needles, and then nothing. No loss of motor control in the hands. Heartbeat slightly elevated, but understandable in the circumstances. My mind is still clear. I sense something happening in my spine. If it were pain, I could report more, but it's an absence of local sensation.
30 seconds.
Diana touches her hand to her upper thigh, then to her back. Her fingers clench.
2 minutes is the longest anyone has survived a Karari dart.
How many samples, sir? What is your error rate? Controls. We're scientists and must behave like it. Please continue, Dr. Summerlee. This is most valuable.
45 seconds.
It's like a slow, cold numbness. Correct that. It's not cold because I can't feel it, so how can it be cold? Around my waist, it's as though everything below my middle is fading away.
There must be something we can do.
You can record this accurately, Mr. Malone. That's what you can do.
1 minute.
The Karari is taking me over. Half of me is gone. Most strange. I'm being erased like writing on a blackboard. And my mind, what a buzz and bustle of images and thoughts.
Dr. Summerlee, concentrate. Can you give me some information about your heart?
1 minute, 15 seconds.
My heart. Oh, I have never been in love. No,
it was the operation of the ventricles I had in mind.
Roxton has his hand to Diana's wrist.
Her pulse is slowing, hardly there.
Diana Summerlee, listen to me. Look at me. Keep your eyes open.
Listen to me. Look at me. Keep your eyes open.
1 minute, 30 seconds.
Hard to breathe. Hard to think.
I asked for information about your heart, and I want it now. Come along, Dr. Summerlee.
Sorry. Yes, my heart. Arrhythmia is fluttering like a sick bird in my chest.
1 minute, 45 seconds.
Speaking of birds, I utterly question your identification of the scarlet ibis.
That's too difficult. Can't you just let me be?
No, I cannot. Tell me about the scarlet ibis. Its full name, please. Latin. You're good at that sort of rather useless sort of thing, aren't you?
2 minutes.
I can see. Mist. I'm not sure if I can still speak.
Diana Summerlee's eyes start to close.
The name of the ibis, Dr. Summerlee. Summerlee!
Challenger, you can't...
Pay attention! Dr. Summerlee, name of the bird, please.
Dosimus rupa.
That's better. Malone.
2 minutes, 15 seconds.
I may have been mistaken about the ibis. You hear me?
I'm very confused.
Diana. Dr. Summerlee's eyelids flutter. She is dazed, but there is light in those grey-green eyes.
Challenger! I do wish you could stop hectoring me about the ibis.
We shall discuss the ibis at a later time, dear lady. Doctor. Well, somebody give her some water. Roxton, Malone, pull yourselves together, for goodness sake. Dithering around, have to do it all myself. Boats to shore. Canoes. Costa. Am I supposed to be a translator on this expedition as well as everything else?
2 minutes, 30 seconds.
Thursday, August the 20th. The jungle is denser. Our tributary branches several times, and each branch seems identical to the others. Even Challenger's massive self-confidence is eroded by the task of navigating this watery maze. But a palm tree, shaped like a question mark, hangs out over the water.
What do you make of that, Summerlee?
It is surely an acai palm, Euterpe oleracea.
I fully believe in your recovery. This was the acai which I took for my landmark. You see beneath it?
A stream!
Easily missed, because there's no break in the trees.
Uh-huh. Push through and find my gateway to the unknown. Sort of phrase you might have a use for, Malone.
Thank you.
We are in a tunnel of hazy green sunshine. The water is clear as crystal, motionless as glass, green as the edge of an iceberg. One can hardly tell as one looks ahead where the distant green water ends and the distant green archway begins.
Fish are plenty. Look, a stork. Heron. Ah, yes. Ibis.
No larger animals. And not the slightest indication of man.
No engine here. Too much afraid. Kurupuri.
Kurupuri.
Yeah.
Kurupuri. The devilish spirit of the woods. The poor beggars think there is something fearsome over this way and avoid it. Wildly superstitious. That said, they may of course have a point.
Superstition. You're right, Lord John. Ignorance, yes?
What a thing! Now, what species is that?
The towering cliffs of the plateau. As I saw in Maple White's sketchbook.
1,000 feet high. What do you think?
I should say so.
The ridges and the rocks. What's the word? The striations. Remind me of the Salisbury Crags in Edinburgh. They seem to be upheavals of the basalt, although I'm no expert.
But clearly your education does extend beyond rugby, Mr. Malone. You hide yourself, as men do.
Diana Summerlee looks at me with a little smile, and I have no ready response. That smile, those eyes. I urgently wish that in certain directions my education were more rounded.
You see the pinnacle? See the tree? That's where I shot the pterodactyl.
To one side of the crags of the plateau is a thin pinnacle of rock. It is level with the top of the plateau and looks as though it had split away from it in the past, leaving a wide chasm between the two. On the top of the pinnacle grows a single tree.
Climbed halfway up the cliffs to take the shot. Though, I suppose you would say, Dr. Summerlee, that the pterodactyl was a species of stork. One of the ones that has leathery skin and teeth in its jaws.
All I want is the truth, Professor Challenger. I have a memory, very blurred, of your saying that we're scientists and should behave like scientists.
You remember that? That's fascinating. Well, the light is going. Roxton, around now you normally tell us it's time to make camp.
Do you know I'm beginning to enjoy these academic debates? But yes, time to make camp.
The ground at the foot of the cliff is rocky and broken, the going slow and difficult. Mid-afternoon, our fortune changes.
Come with me and see what we can find.
Over here!
faded copy of the Chicago Democrat.
Empty meat tins. A brandy bottle. It's one of Maple White's campsites. And dug into the earth. An arrow. Pointing west.
A mile further on, the cliff face bends inwards, forming a bay. Growing there, a considerable patch of high bamboo with strong, sharp tops.
Like so many spears pointing up. Look up there, at the edge of the plateau. That huge rock jutting out into space like a beak. I don't like this place.
I can see something in the depths of the bamboo. Machetes, gentlemen.
A human skull. Detached from the skeleton.
The skeleton's over here. The canes are growing right through it. Just a few fragments of clothes. And a silver cigarette case.
With JC engraved upon it.
What's that?
The silver is hardly tarnished, so this poor devil met his fate recently. Yet there's no flesh on the bones.
Animals and insects, Mr. Malone.
But who is JC?
Maple White had a companion. James Culver. This must be Culver. He must have fallen from the cliff top.
I'm here. Did these people fall too? Over here, Malone.
Oh, carpet of bones.
Human bones.
Out, my companions. Out, into the light.
5 more miles and another sign. An arrow, chiseled out of the rock, pointing to a narrow fissure in the cliff.
This is just a dead end. The rock is too straight and smooth for an ascent.
Señor, wait. Look to the side. Hmm?
The mouth of a cave. Perfect.
Come on in.
I look first. It's my job. In places like this, who knows? Snakes. Kurupuri, too. I call you when it is safe.
Rubble. From floor to ceiling.
It is blocked. But maybe there is a way. There's a space in the stones. Only room for one person up there.
Let me see. Have a care, man.
Yes. All I need to do is enlarge the gap.
I don't think that's a good idea.
What's that, Gomez?
When you're older and more experienced, Dr. Somerley, you'll more readily recognize a good idea when you see one.
Challenger, come back down now.
I have the distinct feeling the ceiling is about to fall in. Will you be so kind?
Run like hell!
A little close. But here we all are.
I hope you're satisfied, Professor.
I am. I found the door that Maple White closed behind him.
But now, it's shut forever.
Never mind. I see with perfect clarity how we shall make our ascent to the plateau. It was staring me in the face.
Roast suckling pig. Oh, what a glorious smell. I couldn't keep away.
A duty. Bagged him in the scrub. Like a pig, yes, but not quite. Rum-looking customer, in fact. Give the spit another turn, if you would. I was thinking about what happened in the cave. About our man, Gomez. Something about the sequence of events.
I am not the only one lured by the smell of roasting a duty. It swoops out of the night, wings so vast it flap over us like a canopy. I glimpse a long, snake-like neck, a fierce red greedy eye, and a great snapping beak. The next instant, it is gone, and with it our dinner.
20-foot wingspan! You saw the beak, some of me.
I saw something.
A pterodactyl! A pterodactyl, Summerlee!
You, Malone, our independent witness. What did you see?
Wings. A long neck. Yes. But I cannot adjudicate in this.
Oh, coward.
Tomorrow, we resolve these differences.
The rock pinnacle. That it could be climbed, we had Challenger's assurance. Yet a great abyss lay between it and the plateau.
We can never get across.
I will show you how. Just needed a little thinking about.
Challenger has brought climbing equipment, and the first half of the ascent is relatively easy. From there on, the climb becomes steeper, sometimes hair-raising. But Challenger gains the summit with extraordinary agility for so unwieldy-looking a man and fixes a rope around the considerable tree which grows there. We are soon able to scramble up to the grassy platform which forms the summit.
It was an exhilarating climb, wasn't it?
Certain points exceedingly so.
Oh, wonderful! Jungle as far as the eye can see. And for 1,000 miles beyond that, oh, civilization has disappeared, drowned in a sea of green.
Over here, Mr. Malone.
I join Challenger and Roxton, who are standing at the base of the tree.
You see the plateau?
Full 40 feet away. It might as well be a mile.
Now look at the tree.
Oh, 50, 60 feet high. Yes!
You worked it out, young Malone. Clever devil, old Challenger.
And so I am set the task of cutting the tree under the very specific directions of Challenger. The tree buries its upper branches in the bushes of the plateau, while the main severed body of it slides to the very edge of our pinnacle. But no, it stops. Yay!
A bridge to the unknown. Title for one of your articles, perhaps, Malone.
Thank you, Dr. Summerlee.
I claim the honor of crossing.
I can't allow it.
Can't allow it?
You're a man of science.
I'm far too valuable a man of science to take the risk. Roxton is our warrior.
Too valuable? Well, I yield to your line of argument.
How are we to cross it, exactly? It's not the most stable of structures.
How do you think? Like this!
Roxton strolls across the trunk. 1,000 feet above the ground, rifle under one arm, as coolly as if he were walking down the Strand on the way to his club. He waves at us, come on over. The rest of us straddle the trunk and move along in undignified hops. Challenger and Summerlee argue about this and that, while after one glance into the gulf, my mouth becomes too dry for speech.
Give me your hand, young Malone, and up. Welcome to Maple Whiteland.
Last.
Joy to you, Challenger.
My companions make a preliminary foray a short distance into the brushwood.
See how marked the difference in vegetation is. And did you ever see a lichen resembling this?
In all the books I've studied, Professor, I have to confess, I have not.
See, that's what I mean about books. Roxton, over here!
The bridge is gone! What happened?
Lord John Roxton.
Here I am, Gomez.
What an honor that you remember my name. How difficult to remember all the names of. What would you say, you Indian chaps? É um privilégio trabalhar para você. What a joy to send you to this long death. Far better than an accident in a cave. You are trapped now. And you will die there.
I have done you no wrong.
Remember Pilgrim Locke?
Petro.
You did not remember his name. He was my brother. You shot him 3 years ago on the Putumayo River. I have waited and waited. And now I avenge his memory.
The smile, now I remember. Your brother's smile. The Putumayo River. But there is another truth. Your brother, Gomez, I did shoot him. But surely you must know why.
Oh, you killed so many.
Roxton?
Gomez bows gravely to us, his smile fixed and maniacal. He slides down the rope from the pinnacle, down to where our tree bridge lies far below. And Roxton's nitro seems to move of its own volition, faster than a snake, homing in on Gomez.
No. I do really rather think not.
Gomez continues his descent. We look about us. Obvious thought. Is there a tree here that is high enough to make another bridge? Nothing within 100 yards. Gomez is right. We are as trapped as if we had been deposited on the moon. I shall continue this journal, but whether anyone will know of our fate, I do not know.
In The Lost World by Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized by Chris Harold, Professor Challenger was played by David Robb, Dr. Diana Summerly by Jasmine Hyde, Lord John Roxton by Jamie Glover, Malone by Jonathan Forbes, Gomez by Milton Lopez, Beaumont by Sam Dale, Meldrum by Sean Baker, Maple White by Nyasha Hetendi, Tarp Henry by Brian Bowles, The Indian Tribesman by Vinicius Salas, and Edith Challenger by Jane Whittenshaw. The Lost World is directed by Marilyn Imrie.
And you can hear part two of The Lost World next week at the same time. Have young writers forgotten how to be funny? That's one of the questions in Open Book after the news. But first, a word from Michael Blastland.
I'm at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange on one of the old traditional trading floors. Does this riotous market represent the pinnacle of economic order? A vast global system that produces wealth beyond imagination, revealing the prices of everything. Or is it a zoo that from time to time behaves with animal unpredictability and upsets the whole economic order? The story of economics continues with me, Michael Blastland, on Radio 4 this Wednesday at 4:30.